Hello, and welcome to this edition of the Entrepreneurship Through Acquisition podcast, sponsored by the Polsky Center for Entrepreneurship at the University of Chicago Booth School of Business. I'm Brian O'Connor, adjunct professor of entrepreneurship at Chicago Booth, and joining me today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Darren Shillaire, Booth grad and recent president of Specialty Sales LLC, which is a wholesale distributor providing a complete package of hoses, tubings, couplings, fittings, clamps, valves, and related items to a broad range of industries, a company that he acquired through his firm Eagle Tower Capital. And Darren will share with us a little bit more on that business and how he came to become the president. So Darren, thanks for joining. Pleasure to have you on the show.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Great. So if you wouldn't mind, maybe a good place to start would be telling us a little bit more about Specialty Sales.
Sure. So Specialty Sales is a wholesale distributor of industrial tubing and associated fittings. So we sell tubing to the car wash industry, agriculture industry, food and beverage industry, water and pure water purification, and other industrial uses. So we fill a typical wholesale distributor role where we are buying in large quantities from suppliers of various types of product, and we are selling that product downstream to either other resellers or other industrial manufacturers. So anything that can be moving fluids throughout a industrial process, we would be selling the tubing that does that, as well as the fittings and associated components that go with it.
Sounds like an interesting little business, and precisely the business that you probably anticipated operating as a young boy. That was sort of where you saw yourself growing up and running a business.
Yes, exactly. I've had a passion for industrial tubing and fittings my entire life.
Joking aside, it does sound like a great business. What was it about the opportunity that you found compelling? Because clearly you have opportunity in this company, and you've got what I'm sure is a big sort of plan and opportunity ahead. What is it that drew you to this opportunity?
Yeah, I think that, I looked at a lot of companies over the search process, so I had a pretty good idea of the ability to evaluate a good company versus a not-so-good one. What drew me to Specialty Sales, I think, were a number of things. First of all, they've built a great business over a long time there, so we had a great base of customers, great relationships with our suppliers, and a great starting point as to for me to come into the business. We also have a great team at Specialty Sales. That we have a number of key employees who have been at the company for, in some cases, close to 40 years. And so that was a great opportunity for me to come into, where I would have employees that we could learn from and who could maintain those relationships with our customers, with our vendors, et cetera.
Great, great people, great product, great customers. Sounds like a pretty solid foundation for you to come in as the new president.
Fantastic. Absolutely.
Congratulations on the recent close.
Thank you.
So maybe let's take a step back. So why entrepreneurship through acquisition? What sort of led you down this path to being interested in acquiring and ultimately operating a small business?
Sure. So I spent most of my career in the consulting world in various operational improvement roles, first in distribution and supply chain, and then moving up through other forms of strategy and management consulting in big firms, always in a large corporate environment. So as I came out of Booth in 2016, I hadn't really heard about the ETA model at that point, but was starting to think about how I could be more entrepreneurial with my career, how I could get into a smaller, more family-owned business environment, and kind of reap the risks and rewards of that through a significant portion of my financial stake being in equity. I evaluated doing the kind of tech startup role. I didn't necessarily have an idea that I thought was necessarily marketable, and I don't necessarily have a computer science or other deep technology or technology background. And When I learned about the entrepreneurship through acquisition model, I thought that that was going to be a good fit for my skill set, and was going to be allow me to fulfill those entrepreneurial desires in a way that was going to be a good fit for me.
Yeah, and while maybe not assuming as much risk as you may have in developing a new product or a new service where you'd need to prove out the market, get your first dollar of revenue from your first customer. And so you've clearly found a great asset in a good market with, as we've talked about, a good team, a good product, a good sort of loyal base of customers to sort of de-risk that entrepreneurial endeavor.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's great to have a baseline to start from, and going into an operating successful company is a great place to be.
Yeah, great. So Darren, many different ways to pursue the entrepreneurship through acquisition path. I understand that you chose to self-fund. Maybe for the listeners, just sort of a brief description of what that kind of entailed for you that can look different for a lot of different people. So what did that self-funded approach mean for you and some of the benefits that you enjoyed in pursuing that path versus maybe raising a search fund or affiliating with a group, private equity group or something similar?
Sure. So I'm a big advocate for the self-funded model. I think it can work really well depending on what the searcher's objectives are, and worked really well and was a great fit for my objectives. When I first learned about the ETA model, most of the information that was out there seemed to be very much focused on the funded model. And I initially evaluated that model and started learning more about it, thinking that I was going to go out and raise a traditional funded search. The more people that I talked to, and I would recommend that any searcher or prospective searcher do this, just try to talk to as many people as possible as are searching, have searched successfully, hopefully have searched unsuccessfully, because all those perspectives will eventually inform the ultimate decision as to path that you take. The more people that I talk to, the more, especially talking to self-funders, the more I thought the self-funded model was going to be a better fit for my objectives, and I'm really glad that I ended up going that route. Some of the benefits of the self-funded model that I thought were key were mainly based around flexibility. So the flexibility to pursue a broader range of companies that otherwise wouldn't be good candidates for a funded model, specifically around company size. So I was able to pursue companies that were slightly smaller than what would make sense for the economics of a funded model, and I felt that that was an advantage for me, particularly in the market that we're seeing currently, where we're seeing a lot of private equity and other institutional capital competition to buy some of those larger firms. So that was a big positive of going the self-funded route, was being able to shift my search down market, lower than some of that broader competition, and buy a smaller company, which ultimately fulfilled a lot of my personal objectives, I think, better than it would have to take on a lot of investors and buy a larger company.
Yeah. Now, you occasionally see self-funded entrepreneurs pursuing this path with some geographic restrictions or at least geographic preferences. Did that factor into the equation for you at all?
Yes, absolutely. So I knew going in that just due to my personal situation, I wasn't going to be in a position to launch a real nationwide search. And understanding that that is likely to be the expectation of investors in a traditional funded search fund, that wasn't a route that I was willing to take. So I ran my search locally. I searched in the Chicago area, and that'll define that broadly, kind of all the way from Gary, Indiana to Rockford, and then significantly into southeastern Wisconsin, kind of the Chicago, Madison, Milwaukee triangle. And I think that there's advantages and disadvantages to that, but it certainly can inform a different strategy to run a run a locally focused search as opposed to a nationwide.
Sure. And certainly a number of good quality companies in those geographies that would have the types of attributes that you sounds like you likely found in specialty sales. So you weren't starved for potential opportunity in that geography, especially given that you maybe were looking at some smaller businesses and opportunities.
Yes. Yep. I would completely agree with that. There's more than enough opportunity within local geographies, and sometimes focusing your search can actually be helpful in uncovering those.
Yeah. So some of our listeners might be interested to understand, you know, during that period, and Darren, remind me, how many months were you actually dedicated 100% to your search efforts?
I launched my search in June of 2017 and closed in September of 2018.
Okay.
So call that 15 months.
Yeah. So, and during that time, you know, people that are listening might say, you know, 15 months is, you know, a long time to go without a paycheck potentially. And then you layer on top of that some deal pursuit and travel and diligence expense items. How did you think about your budget and managing the expense associated with the search effort?
Yeah, I would say that, again, with the flexibility that the self-funded search allows, given my resume and my background, I was able to pick up independent consulting engagements during that time to help offset some of the costs of the search. You know, there's certainly the risk of doing that kind of too much and getting distracted from the ultimate goal at hand. But the way that I approached it was that if I felt that a consulting engagement was either going to build my network or my skill set in a way that could lead to an ultimate acquisition or lead to my success in that space, I was willing to take some of those items on.
Interesting. That's a creative approach whereby you're generating current income, but also potentially bolstering your search efforts in that work and where it might eventually lead to a target or a potential interesting industry thesis worth exploring further.
Yep.
Yeah. Great. The now let's maybe shift gears over toward and focus on some of the drawbacks to the self-funded model and some of the things that maybe as you're conducting your search during those 15 months, you kind of said, boy, I kind of underestimated the absence of this or the existence of this. I'd love to hear maybe a little bit about your perception of maybe the drawbacks in the path that you chose.
Yeah, so I think we touched on the initial drawback is just that you essentially have no salary or income during that time that is coming from a third party. So you need to be picking up those additional consulting engagements, or you know, essentially you're going to be personally cash flow negative during that search period. So that's the biggest kind of drawback to it. But I think that you know, depending on the ability to manage that, it's worth it for the flexibility that it provides. Some of the other drawbacks are that in a self-funded model, you don't necessarily have that pool of investors or pool of advisors that you would have in either a funded model or an in-residence model. And so you don't necessarily have a built-in sounding board for evaluating opportunities or just getting advice as you go throughout the search process. The way that I remedied that was before I launched my search, I had reached out to a pool of potential investors in the ultimate acquisition, and I continued to keep that group close as somewhat of an informal advisory board. I sent them quarterly updates in the same way that a funded searcher might, and just kind of called on them to potentially answer any questions that I might have as I was evaluating companies. And I think that was effective in two different ways. It provided me that advisory board and that mentorship that was helpful throughout the process. And it also kept that group close in the event that I was going to eventually potentially need to ask them for equity contributions to the business.
Yeah. Fantastic. And a great, great strategy and approach. Can you, without naming names, could you give us a sense for the typical kind of profile of that group? Were these people that you maybe knew from past professional experiences, maybe met during your time at Booth? Are they people that you researched and knew had an interest in entrepreneurship through acquisition, investing sort of generally? What did that group of informal advisors and investors that had not yet actually cut a check or committed any capital to your effort, but the hope was down the road they would. What did that group for you look like, Darren?
Yeah, it was a combination of mentors of mine that I've held throughout my career that I thought would just be well-versed to provide advice in almost any sort of professional situation, as well as folks in my family and friends network who had built and sold business previously. So that gives them a great perspective of what it takes to succeed as an entrepreneur in a small business environment, and also the kind of post-exit capital that would be needed to potentially make investments.
Sure. And what, vis-a-vis your expectations, how did that group and the relationships and the cadence of communication that you maintained with that group, how did that ultimately translate into the equity financing of the deal? Any surprises or missed expectations, or was that, you know, that group that you established during your search, did that ultimately become by and large the group that backed you in the ultimate acquisition?
It didn't actually, and that's mainly due to a combination of factors. One was I shifted my search to somewhat smaller companies due to the competition that was in the marketplace, and I kind of credit the self-funded flexibility for the ability to do that. So that plus the combination of the availability of financing, and I went through the SBA process, ultimately meant that I didn't need to raise the equity that I initially thought I might. That group of advisors are still with me, certainly from an advisory standpoint, but ultimately didn't contribute equity to the acquisition.
Interesting. You mentioned the SBA. I'm assuming you took advantage of the SBA 7A program.
That's correct.
Yeah. What can you tell the listeners about that experience? Maybe let's just drill into that a little bit. How did that look? Any insight that you might be able to share into that as a source of acquisition financing, I think would be excellent.
Yeah, I think the SBA 7A program works great for self-funded searchers. I think that there's some nuances to it that you have to be prepared for and have to get comfortable with. But provided that you can, it's a great source of a good amount of financing at attractive terms that work well for deals in this size range. So some of the things that are different about the SBA that are not necessarily going to be the same with conventional lending. I think the first thing that everyone has to get comfortable with is that they require a personal guarantee. So anybody that's taking an SBA loan, and actually anyone who's writing over, I believe it's 25% of the equity check, is going to need to sign an SBA or a personal guarantee for that loan. So that's something that searchers will need to get comfortable with if they're looking to go the SBA route. The other thing is that it does not allow any seller rollover equity. So you need to do a 100% buyout. You can't have earnouts or anything that looks like an earnout in your deal structure to qualify for the SBA lending. You can have seller notes, but they certainly can't be tied to the performance of the company in any way. So those two things are unique in terms of the SBA versus the conventional lending. But if you can find a deal that fits into that that profile, the SBA is 10-year terms on the loans at attractive rates with no covenants, which can be a great source of financing, especially at the end of the market where conventional lenders are somewhat reluctant to lend if you're doing a deal that's under $5 million in total enterprise value.
Sure. Well, thanks for sharing that insight. I know that'll be valuable for those that are listening in. What can you, maybe before we move on, a little bit about that ultimate process and what that looked like. Any insight that you'd be able to share into where maybe folks can go to learn a little bit more about that program and what some of the application and requiring and the actual administration of the SBA 7A program would look like, or any insights that you can sort of share there to demystify this?
Absolutely. So I think that we're lucky to have some great SBA lenders that are within our search fund community and within the ETA community. So I would absolutely reach out to them, and they can tell you much more about their 7A programs and what they're lending against and what type of businesses that they look for. I will say for searchers to not necessarily underestimate the amount of effort that it will take to close that portion of the deal, in terms of learning which lenders find which types of acquisitions attractive. Knowing that going in is will save you a lot of time after you're under LOI as to which banks you show the deal to, if you can know kind of upfront whether or not they're going to be interested in financing it.
Sure.
The SBA underwriting process is... you know, it's not a walk in the park. There's a lot of the hurdles to jump through. But ultimately, I think that any loan closing process is going to be somewhat like that. There are certain SBA guarantee requirements that you have to get through, mainly that due to the personal guarantee, the SBA and the Associated Bank is somewhat underwriting you and your ability as much as they are underwriting the business itself. So there's kind of both sides of that underwriting process of all of your personal creditworthiness, in addition to the characteristics of the business.
Sure. And if I can, you know, if I'm hearing you correctly, I mean, there are clearly a number of experts on this topic and partners that you would look to find when incorporating this into the ultimate capital structure that you use in your acquisition. But maybe if you're a searcher out there, perhaps it's fair to say getting those conversations started early and often with a number of potential partners would be a good move, just given the nuances and all of the learning that you needed to go through, right? It seems like a relatively lengthy process, learning process at least.
Absolutely. And I think it only helps you to build credibility throughout your search process with these potential lenders, so that when you have a deal in hand, it's not the first time that they're talking to you and they start to understand your thought process. You start to understand what they're looking for, and you can speak their language and have those conversations much more quickly.
Well, not dissimilar from how you might think about developing a relationship and establishing credibility with an equity financing source. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. I would think about it in a very similar fashion.
Yeah. So, Darren, if we could, maybe one of the last topics I'd love to touch on. It's a little bit of a pivot from the discussion around the SBA, but your sourcing approach and how that might have been different given that you were self-funded. We talked about the geography focus. We talked a little bit about, you know, that you did come kind of down market a little bit. Were there any other things that were maybe unique to your search as it relates to industries that you were spending time in? Anything that you'd care to share about your general sourcing approach?
Yeah, absolutely. So I did follow a bit of a different sourcing approach than a lot of other searchers. And that wasn't necessarily my strategy as I set out or necessarily intentional, but just kind of the way that things shook out. So given the way that I was focused on local companies and a local search, I focused heavily on networking throughout the Chicago and southeastern Wisconsin area. So I was taking meetings and talking to every single attorney, CPA, wealth manager, outsourced CFO, any service provider that I could get a hold of who would have relationships with small business owners and might understand their succession requirements and what they're looking for as they approach retirement age and are getting ready to sell their businesses. And I found that to be a successful source of proprietary leads for me, such that I was never really able to stand up the traditional proprietary cold outreach machine that traditional searchers are typically working with. So I, you know, between networking with other service providers and building relationships with brokers, that was where I was seeing 100% of my deal flow. The proprietary model, I think, is certainly successful. It just wasn't something that I was able to really get going, and I wasn't able to bring interns on board within the self-funded model enough to really build that process.
Sure, sure. And what can you tell us about specialty sales and how the sort of the exact channel that came into your came onto your radar?
Yeah, specialty sales was a brokered transaction. So it was represented by a sell-side advisor, but it was a sell-side advisor that I had built a relationship personally with over the prior year of searching. And it was a small enough transaction that it wasn't being put out to a large auction process with a number of big institutional buyers, kind of due to a combination of the size of the company as well as the desires of the seller and who she was looking to be the next generation of that business. So kind of due to that networking and that relationship that I had built, I kind of got on the inside of that process early on and emerged as the choice out of a kind of smaller, more closely held process.
Well, and probably a lot of it had to do with your unique story and value proposition to the company, the selling shareholder, and the situational dynamic. My guess is that you were quite different than maybe some of the other suitors that had expressed interest in the opportunity.
Yeah, I think it was a great fit for me from a situational perspective. That was the exact type of business and business owner that I was looking for. Was as I positioned myself as the reason that I went into searching was to manage a business over the long term. That's another thing that led me towards a self-funded model was that I wasn't interested in necessarily being held to exit timelines or IRR requirements or some of those other things that are kind of a necessity of the other models. And so positioning myself as someone who wanted to buy a business and wanted to manage it over the long term, I think was a great fit for the owner of specialty sales as she was looking to transition her business to someone who was going to manage it over the long term in the next generation.
Great. Darren, this has been fantastic. Any parting words of wisdom or advice that you might give someone that's contemplating the ETA path, or maybe they're in the midst of their journey? Anything that you'd like to share sort of as we wrap up here?
Yeah, I would say that as you approach the ETA path, I would think long and hard about what your true objectives are out of the process. I found that to be really helpful for me. When I started out, I wrote down my objectives and what I was actually looking to get out of it and referred back to those on an almost daily basis as I was going through the search. It's really easy to get caught up when you're in the search and get excited about certain opportunities. And if you step back and actually look at them versus your objectives, you might realize that that's not actually meeting what you set out to do. And in the search, as much of an emotional roller coaster as it can be sometimes, it's helpful to have that that guidepost to look back on as you go through it. And some of those objectives will lead you down different models for the search. So just know that there are many ways to approach the acquisition model, whether it's within a funded model, within a family office, within an entrepreneur in residence model, or self-funded, and all of those can meet different objectives for different people who are looking to get into it. So just know that there's more than one way to skin this cat.
That's invaluable advice, Darren, and super insightful. So with that, we'll wrap up. Thank you so much for taking the time and being generous. You're just a couple months into running your new business, so I undoubtedly you're busy. So thank you so much for your generosity in sharing your time and your insights with us today. On behalf of the Polsky Center for Entrepreneurship at Chicago Booth, we appreciate you being our guest today on the Entrepreneurship Through Acquisition podcast.
Thank you.